John Wooden writes, "I'm beginning the visit with Wade and Rick and Mimi this Saturday afternoon, the 1st of July '72. John Wooden writes, "I'm beginning the visit with Wade and Rick and Mimi this Saturday afternoon, the 1st of July '72. Channel 1 right, and the beginning of the visit with Wade and Rick and Mimi this Saturday afternoon, the 1st of July, 72.
I feel like it's just now I really feel that Emerson is, the time is just ready for people to understand Emerson.
I don't see how the people in the 1850s knew what he was talking about. Not a large group of them.
Well, that's one thing I have found out, that you get, irrespective of the content, you get a great deal outside the content. It's the presence he has. And he, I don't know if he's somehow enfranchised as you give you your voice. Somehow or other, approach him and see if you can feel any of the air. Need a little air, don't you?
Oh, that's fine. That's fine.
Is that enough? Can you feel it?
Yeah.
Let me tell you, Wade, Rick and then, God almighty. Come on, blow on me.
Maybe we ought to put it over here, guy, and let it circulate further away, and it'll get the blow on you. Unless it gets direct on you.
Yeah, I'm not
right here. Yeah, you'd have to be right in front of it, and have it all get.
Behind the stove there?
He had it there the other day. Bound to work.
Now, you see, we have never. I've worked, Rick has worked with me on some of the people out here, but nobody in Millinocket. I don't guess you know anybody over there, do you?
No, I don't. I just kind of driven through there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't. You got to have a thing at once. But this, you know, you see the politics. He got into the politics a little bit, a good bit. Introducing just a little order, a little something over there. And it backfired, but anyhow, he got into it and talked about it. Then on the side, you see all these people who are really not in politics, which you get into. Old George Wilson. Now, that night at the town meeting, that's the second one of the town meetings. It exploded that night. And old George Wilson, he's sort of in his prime, isn't he? 40?
I'd say.
But he handles heavy equipment, operates it. And he's walking over there wanting to say something, had these arms up like this, you see. And they tell him he's out of order. So every now and then he'd rise and ask him if he's still out of order. Now he's a bird, line him out a little bit.
Mm. Hell, he was out of order when they did let him talk. I mean, two or three different ways. He's never in order, George Wilson is.
Yeah.
Well, he operates that heavy machinery, and his mind reflects it quite a bit. His mind works in that sphere of prodding and strong power. He thinks greatly about power. And for instance, he cleaned up that piece of property the other day with a caterpillar. And this little piece of property right back of mine is about 100 by 200 feet, a little bit better. It might be an acre. No, it's not quite, but it doesn't make too much difference. And he got him a cat down there, and about the first thing he did was excuse the size of the cat because it was a small one. It wasn't a D8, D7 cat. It was about a D3 or something like that. Uh-huh. Had about a 4-foot blade on it. And that was a bit embarrassing, see? I know what he means, just like when I go out in the field with a camera or something, and you got the wrong camera, you got to excuse yourself, see? If you don't have a classy piece of equipment, one that everybody recognizes as the right piece of equipment. And you can see him. He get on that tractor, and he just rears back. Caterpillar. And he can handle the hell out of that machine. He can do it. But you can just see him, and he just becomes part of it, and you know it's his life. And this is the way he thinks, is to use that power to push things around, and he runs his whole life on this same scale of this power pushing thing. Power of the fist, or of the gun. And he's one that shot at the sheriff not too long ago.
Oh
yeah. Oh, he was rabble-rousing one night, and somebody called the sheriff on him. And a couple of them came up to the door. They had guns, and he says, "You got guns there?" He says, "Yeah." He said, "Just a minute." He goes back in the bedroom. He brings out his shotgun. He says, "All right, come on up and let's talk. We're equal now." And so they got through with their talk, and he says, "Well," mumbles at him something about get on out. So they got in the car, started driving out. And he hauls off and shoots at the squad car with a shotgun. So they turned around, came back, and arrested him, took him to jail, and he bailed out. And he's forever doing very nice things like that. That's his idea of settlement. Now Buster was telling me not long ago that some guy in town owed him some money. Oh, matter of $100 or $50, it wasn't a great sum. It was just the principal's son. And it was right there. Buster was working around in front of his place. And this character that owed the money was standing around there. And George came walking up there and says, "Where's my $120? And the fellow had done the same thing before. He said, "Well, I've got it. It's coming. I'll get it for you." And George pulled out a pistol and shot it. And knocked off a piece of brick on top of Buster's place and came down and landed right next to Buster. And Buster was lying next to a car and scared the shit out of him. He thought he had been shot. George had his money within an hour's time.
Half hour if it had been me.
Now he operates under that law. And he's apt to die under it, I would assume.
Yeah.
Well, he's apt to get his retribution one of these days, in one way or the other.
Yeah.
And he crossed the wrong person, has got a heavier hand than he has.
Yeah. A lot of the law has a heavy hand.
Oh, yes. Oh, Lord, they heavy-handed me last year, something fierce. And last year, about 3 months ago. And IRS people, they're beautiful.
Oh.
But George, one of the things he did, see, it was a whole square of property, a half a block, and that'd be about 200 feet by 600 or 800 feet. And it had an alley. It went back of my place, and back of the gallery and the Weavers, with the garbage collection people went up and down, and the water went up and down, the cable TV. City of Micanopy had never gotten it declared as dedicated right away. So George buys his piece of property, so he buys all the way up to the gallery property, all the way up to my property, plus a little piece in between. The next thing you know, he's done chopped the tree down and falls right across the alley. And then he parks his boat sort of cattywampus. And just, he's got this hellacious big piece of land, but because it wasn't dedicated and he wants to cause trouble, this is his way of action.
He just asked for it.
He figures they asked for it, and he's going to give it to them.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
He's not asking for trouble. He's causing it. that's his attitude about it. That piece, I don't know whether you read that explanation talk that was such a failure, but there was a whole thing struck out on it that was all about George Wilson.
No, I didn't read that.
And I thought I'd just delete that. It was all about George Wilson and why the city of Micanopy needed to get cranked up. Because if they didn't get some of this stuff settled, I'd be without water. And it came damn close to that. Because the water lines are running on his property, see? And he's just apt to get ornery enough to cut the blasted water off from my house. And so it goes all kinds of hell. And here I am. He's not spiting me, he's spiting the city, see? And I'm happen to be in the way. So I get it too. And he could care less.
Yeah.
Garbage hadn't been collected in 2 weeks over there.
How long is that lane?
No, 600 feet, something like that.
Yeah. Along that particular alley you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, McQuinney can't do anything about that.
No, but, it's a good excuse because they always came in around the gallery way, which is a piece of property that he bought, not the other end back of the Weavers. And so when they start, they generally come in there. And so they start to turn down there, and here's a big tree. Well, they say maybe it'll be gone. So they go on, and the tree's still there later on when they come back. So there's our garbage piling up, and I've got to get trucks and haul it off tomorrow. Oh, another thing about George, this is a little bit, it borders on aesthetics, the thing, but it shows you the mind. One of the things I wanted to get working on this planning thing was primarily educational program for the public.
I hear you.
That you could bit by bit get the public to have some sensibility about visual approach and what possibly was a little bit better than this, maybe why it should be that way. Just sort of do it slow, and why it's not really a good thing to have trailers just plopped anywhere in any way, any type of trailer.
Yeah.
So, George and I met out back, and I was talking to him. He got his trailer resettled. See, the whole hassle was him moving the trailer from one place to another on the same piece of property. He got it moved, and he did it big this time. He cut the tongue off, cut the wheels off, and got his own new septic tank, and got the yard leveled and straightened out. And see, the trailer's in a very prominent place, and people, for some reason, always tend, if the road runs this way, be damned if they don't have to put the trailer this way, and the damn things are 60 feet long, you know, and they're ugly as hell.
Yeah.
Instead of putting it, like scooting it up over here somewhere,
where
he had plenty of room, he could have backed it up closer to a fence and under a tree.
Yes.
And visually, people wouldn't be confronted by this massive tin as they drive by.
Yeah.
You know, it could make a nice yard and grow stuff in it. But you watch it.
I watched it.
Every one of them will come up right next to the road. I don't care how much property they got.
Yeah.
And they'll put that blasted machine right there.
Broadside.
Like those people up on the hill over here.
Yeah,
right out in the sun, too.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
And they haven't put a shrub there.
No.
Yeah.
And so it just glows. You know?
All they got to do is put some of these mimosas and that'd take care of it.
Yeah.
Or some of these little locusts.
Well, I was talking to George about, tried to angle up to him a little bit. I said, George, you know, these trailers would be really nice things. Like if we can get, you ever thought about like putting a good old pole shed over it? You know, just a pole and tin shed, and just wrap a screen porch, and they give you a nice screen porch, and you've got a a second roof that protects your trailer. Not expensive. You probably do it $300 or $400 to do it yourself. And you know, that's really a nice looking thing with old tin roof and screen and poles. Well, first of all, he ain't gonna have nothing to do with tin. It's gonna be asphalt. He's thinking about it, but it's gonna be an asphalt roof. Well, okay. I mean, this opinionated people or something. I mean, you know, it's just like I'm a Ford man. You know, that's the kind of people they are. Somebody comes talks to them about Chevy. See, oh, I'm a Ford man. You know, and there's no way in the world you can get them talk about Chevys if they're Ford.
Now, it's
men.
Not my profession that makes me shiver at the thought of George Wilson. It's that blast. I'm telling you, that just evaporates me. I don't want to teach them anything. I tell them anything. But that just not me winding, you see.
Well, when you live next to them and you live in the neighborhood of them and you're trying to think about, maybe it's a mistake to think about people too much, but how do you approach them? And he went way on further down the line from that. He said, well, I was thinking about it. I was just going to get some more of this aluminum siding and build me a nice front porch around there. Same stuff that makes. See, that's the worst thing about trailers. People feel committed to that aluminum.
Yeah.
They're totally committed to it. Next thing you know, they have a monster abortion set up for you.
Yeah.
And so I said, George, good Lord, aluminum is probably about the worst looking thing we can have in our society right now. That's the only objection to it. I know it's cheap. I said, but God, I mean, if you just use wood and screen, you can't go wrong, no matter how you put it up. You know, it's hard to go wrong. You put it up backwards and upside down,
yeah.
You find shape.
Yeah.
This wooden screen, forget about it. And he said, well, I don't know whether I want to use aluminum or not. I was thinking about using different colored blocks out front.
Oh.
You know, which is like one step further. I could just visualize him getting a straight nigger house built out there, green and orange and red and purple blocks.
Yeah.
Set up out front, and by that time, I don't think he was putting me on. I think he was serious, because he generally is quite serious about things like that.
Yeah.
You can talk to him, and he gives you some information, but he won't absorb anything that I don't know that there's anything that you could put out that
yeah.
man will absorb, because he's gone so far along. And evidently something happened probably about 17, 18 years old or somewhere down the line that just went click and encased that mind. And the only thing he's learned is technical stuff and his own experience. And that's been hard.
Yes, and that
hard
heavy
experience.
Equipment don't allow him to bounce much, does it?
I think it's affected his mind. I do. I can't. You really can't say that because some of the, I mean, like the... Oh, we have nine electricians in Micanopy, which is pretty overloaded with electricians when you get the size of population. They were joking about that the other day. Well, Frank Weaver is an electrician now. And hell, he's got the same attitude as George Wilson, except he is a little bit more malleable. He'll give just a little bit and listen just a little bit. There's no, you won't talk to George Wilson. He won't sit still and listen to a story. As long as he's doing the conversing, and he's at center stage,
yeah.
he's in good shape.
Yeah.
There's no return.
Yeah.
I tell him some of my truck driving stories, but I make them awful short. They don't care the punch that his stories do, because most of the time I report to other stories, which are more exciting, you know, breaking out headlights with hammers and this kind of thing, stuff that I never do. I mean, his world is really a world of violence. He enjoys that.
Yeah, he just lives with that.
Well, a town meeting doesn't sound like a place for him.
Oh, he was a star.
Too much decorum for him to put up with there.
That didn't worry him in the least. That's... You might say it's a favorable thing in him, but I wouldn't really say so. But he certainly is George Wilson wherever he goes.
Nothing gets under his skin?
No. There's no way to touch him that I know of.
Maybe he's an old truck driver. He's a heavy equipment operator. You know, we had to, used to have, if you got somebody to put it tough, you see, he's an old truck driver.
Yeah.
But you see, you lose your...
Well, he's developed a great sense of importance through his ability in handling this machinery. You see, that drag line I was telling you about on I-75, and I think that's a 6-yard drag line. One scoop will fill up one of those tandem dump trucks. You know, the 16-wheel dump trucks. They're about, the bed on them is a good 40 feet long in that dump truck. And one scoop will do it on this drag line. And hell, you pay $40 an hour for small pieces of machinery to run. And I know this thing runs at probably $200 or $300 an hour or something like that as a capital type return. Old Andy Graham over there bought he and his son just bought a backhoe. They pay $1,800 a month for it, time payment. They sit there at home. The kid, I don't know what he does. I don't know whether he drinks a tremendous amount. He seems to be reasonably sober. Andy races cars most of the time, fights with his wife. They don't do a damn thing. Andy rustles a few jobs once in a while. They hire an operator to run that machine, and both of them live off of it. Yeah. And neither one of them do anything. I asked the kid, little Andy, I said, well, what do you do? Not a damn thing. But anyhow, I mean, that's $40,000 piece of investment on that little backhoe, see? And it's no big thing, I'm sure. It's not a small backhoe, but it's not a tremendous one. And so you can imagine what something... capital investment, so that, and the funny thing about, like, the capitalism involved in that, or management, they do all the calculating about these things. And they've got the job, you know, and the engineers have fought for it. I've been in on that scene, too. How bickering it is for the engineer to get a job to engineer this particular road going through there. They buy favors, you know, and join the Democratic Party, and hire ex-government officials. So, and then the contractor, of course. You ought to go to one of these biddings for these kind of things. All the hell they go through to get it. And then they've got to go through all this financing to buy this machine. It's probably $400,000 or $500,000, if not more, for this kind of sizable piece of machinery. And if they put that kind of capital investment into it, that bloody thing has got to produce practically 24 hours a day. And what does it depend on? One man to run it.
One little bitty man. Little.
And you talk about cockiness. These guys get so cocky. I mean, I know George Wilson does it because he loves to report on that cockiness, see. He really does. He just gets something turned on when he starts talking about how cocky he gets these people telling him to do that and the other, and nobody else can do it. And finally come back there, and they get on their bended knee, and they ask George, please, if he won't do it. And George will pull out his whiskey bottle and take a hit, crawl up there in the cab, and tell them all to go to hell, you know, kiss off, and don't you dare talk to me again like that. I'll work when I please, and I won't work if I don't want to. All this kind of stuff. And they are scared to death because that machinery's not running. They don't know anybody else is going to run it. So he brings that stuff home with him. See. It's hard to fit into a 10 trailer. He should have a solid house of some description.
Yeah.
His wife's as bad as he is, and I don't know what her, she's Indian mostly. She's just mostly insane. He's crazy. I think there's a difference there.
But did she get it from him?
I think they probably got together because they could function together. Good God, guy, I saw, he went off, he's all the time making good business investments. like buying two old ragged nags and bring them down to fatten up on the pasture. But they were trying to load these cantankerous horses. He'd rented a horse trailer, and they had these old ropes, you know, old halter ropes that had been dragging in manure for 6 years, and fairly well rotted out. And one horse didn't want to be loaded. And so Edie, she's going to load that horse. And I saw her stand there, and that horse rear up, and she's probably all of 100 pounds at the most.
Oh.
You know, really big woman, you know. But her face had cut through anything you can put up. I mean, she's got a strong face. And she stood there and held that halter line. And it's a big line. It went through and cut her finger all the way to the bone and laid the flesh right back. You know, that's how hard she held it. Well, after that, she finished loading the horse. Then she went over and washed out that cut. And Beverly and I were out there and got a little bit concerned, brought some Visahex over, and said, Edie, don't you think it might be a good idea to maybe at least go down to the health clinic or the doctor and get a tetanus shot, because that rope is apt to be pretty nasty. I ain't going to have nothing to do with doctors, just don't like doctors, you know. Just wasn't going to have anything to do with doctors at all. Well, she didn't do it. She didn't do anything. She just closed it back up. And next day, she's out there doing a washing. Now, Edie has, for some reason, I've never talked to her. It's very difficult to talk to Edie at all. George, you can. I take it back. You can converse a little bit with George, but Edie is not conversable at all. She won't even tell you a story. So, for some reason or other, she's had a problem with washing machines. I don't know what happened, whether one of these automatic washing machines bit her or what, but she will not have an automatic washing machine. She thinks they're a damnation to the world, and anybody has an automatic washing machine is meant for hell. She gave me a huge lecture one day about 4 years ago on this automatic washing machine. Now, they've got a $4,000 brand new car, which I assume they paid cash for. They don't hurt for money. Now, these kind of people are strange. You know, they really don't hurt for money at all. And this old machine wore out. I remember watching it. It was really old one. Three-legged jobber with the bringer on top, and it was sitting at an angle, and it was all cruddy and always out in the weather. It finally wore out. And I thought to myself, well, surely they will get an automatic washing machine. Here came a brand new three-legged ringer washing machine. And she still goes through the tubs, you know. Does the tub thing and into the wash and then through the ringer. Hell, I did that a lot when I was a kid. Same story. And I always thought automatic washing machines were pretty good things. But anyhow, there she is back there with doing this wash. With this hand is just finger practically mutilated. And sure enough, it gets infected. So she goes inside a couple of days later after she can't get her washing done because her finger's hurting too much, and gets a pair of scissors and cuts that slab of flesh off.
Oh.
And wraps it back up and goes back out and finishes the washing. So this is she's got that endurance and that pioneering spirit. Really some strong part of the American heritage that comes up through these people is manifested in them. This hardness, this fighting with the basic elements. And
yeah.
It's somehow come like a little bit through the farm and then now into industry. But they maintain that they would fit very fine fighting Indians. Be very proud and probably upstanding citizens. This kind of thing. Of protecting their... Yeah, you know, I was talking to you about the difference in property, feeling about property between George Wilson and that group of people and Don Chimwell's feeling about it, which is a difference between Don Chimwell is pure power, property is power, and their property is place and position.
You don't know George or what's her name?
Edie. They both come from South Carolina, I do believe.
From South Carolina?
Yeah. Yeah.
Of all places.
And they're for... Oh, good God. They'll It's nothing. Phone will ring. One of their grandsons got a stomachache. They jump into that car, and they'll be there in 4 or 5 hours. You know, if the highway patrolman interfere, they'll probably shoot them. Drive 95 miles an hour right up the road. And they'll be there. It just doesn't bother them in the least. They'll just zoom right up.
Now, they're not that far along. Got grandchildren.
Oh, yes. Slews of them. She's got a whole bunch of kids. And George, all the kids that are there, well, there's only one left right now. Girl's probably about 14, something like that. Now, that's George's kid. He had evidently two girls and a boy. The boy was the oldest one. He's the one that got shot by Charlie Birch, who's Horace Birch's son. And this was over some sort of love triangle thing.
Oh, and I didn't.
Charlie, matter of fact, Charlie just got off parole. I think last week. So, I don't know why he didn't celebrate more. Charlie's another character in himself. But anyhow, and then she's got a bunch of kids that have evidently, I don't know how long they've been married. Matter of fact, I'm not even sure that they are married. For that matter, it doesn't make a whole lot of difference. But all of her kids are in South Carolina. And George keeps talking about his property and his family that's in South Carolina, his estate. And he just mouths off something fierce about how much money he's going to inherit as soon as they get things straightened out. And he talks about all the money he has now. And it's hard to tell, because some of these people really do have that money. And I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if he didn't have a whole bunch of money. Not the least bit. Well, it's just like McQuinney. He had to have money to buy all that junk. Because he's not a thief. You don't go steal brand new stuff from Sears and Roebuck all the time.
Set up a safe pack, so if you want to talk.
And, McQuinney's, you know, he doesn't show any money. But he doesn't brag about it. I hadn't talked to him that much. I've been over to see him 2 or 3 times lately, and he's been gone.
Oh, has he?
Well, I went over this morning, and he, there were 2 cars there and a truck. And not a soul in the establishment there. I don't know what. They got spirited off somehow, because the other day there were no cars or anything, and one truck was there. Hadn't been able to capture him. Yeah, I've been, I'd like to talk to him. I've got an excuse to go over to see him.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
Wanted to see where. The house is not exactly tar paper. It's it's a rolled asphalt siding, or roofing they put on the side,
mm-hmm.
And just tacked on.
Yeah, and no boards much under it.
No, I don't think. Probably very loose boarding.
Yeah,
I don't even believe it'd be plywood. And I seem to recall the kitchen is having scrappy linoleum in it, and just ragged shelves all over the place. Place for his instruction manuals and how to operate this machinery. He's bought something like $50,000 worth of machinery to use when he retires.
Good Lord.
He's got it laid up. He doesn't know how to run any of it. Big metal lathes, you know, and chainsaws, and just about any type of machinery like that you can imagine.
Oh, no, not like this land moving equipment.
No, this is small equipment.
You got it in a big chicken house.
Mm-hmm. Big metal barn.
Not a chicken house?
No, it's stronger than chicken house. It's a good barn. Good metal barn. Matter of fact, it's a double barn in parts. Oh, see?
You mean it's metal framing?
No, it's a pole barn, but it's metal. It's not exactly a tin type, light tin. It's a heavier gauge metal, and
yeah.
It's siding and roofing, with door closing on.
Oh.
So it's think of a chicken barn as being rather light.
Yeah.
This has got a lot, a good bit more heavy.
But it's rectangular.
Mm-hmm.
Good size.
Pretty good size.
6 foot.
Well, the entire thing would be about one section of it, excluding chicken barns, would be about 60 by 150 feet or so. That's good size. At least I looked down the side of that thing today, and I looked down there from here to your trailer.
Good Lord. I mean, it puts all that equipment in there.
Yeah. This junk, all mixed up together. I mean, you can pick up the most worthless thing in the world, and then there's a brand new drill press next to it. Just all piled in together.
Unpacked.
So, yeah, some of it's unpacked in boxes.
But he does have some chickens?
He got out of that business, best I know of. Just old raggedy sheds are still there.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to hustle his land too, so I've got a good excuse to get into him. I can get some good talk out of him.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't want to part with it, then we can really get into it and find out why.
Yeah.
This is his land in South Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got some people that buy that kind of property and I can make some money on it. So it behooves me to do it. So that's a good way to make a living. And just convince him this. Time to sell his property.
Yeah.
And I get to talk to him in the meantime. Yeah, that's why I was dealing with Billy Richardson.
Yeah.
And looking better all the time. I was talking to him the other day. He seems to be a right interesting character. Well, hello, man.
Put up a chair. That's the coolest place right there, man. I believe you can come around here if you want to. Just take a chair. Oh, is that your transportation?
Mm-hmm.
You must have gotten that fixed finally.
Finally. Something
didn't hear you come up.
Yeah.
It's wobbling though.
No.
You don't need any bread right at the moment, do you?
Yeah, Billy seems to, funny thing, he sort of got talking a little bit more last time I was together, and he was in a bit of a rush, but didn't want to be.
Let me tell you, he's out of the field. Now, McQuinney has that little tractor with all the implements.
Yes, either he or his kid.
Oh.
He's the one that's always driving it. I think his kid inherited his tendency.
Oh.
Now, he works for the State Road Department and mows, runs these mowers up and down the highway.
Oh.
And on the weekends, I understand he took over the garbage collection. His old man got out of it. I just heard that today. And he's bought that old motorcycle, and he and his wife go zipping around. You know, next thing, Playboy. They really have a good time.
That motorcycle was a big front wheel and a little back wheel.
No, it's a regular one. That'd be funnier yet.
That's what this boy here, he grew up, James Sawyer's boy. He works for Winn-Dixie. He's a stock boy.
Oh.
And he got one of those things. And I see him with all that Ku Klux every now and then, and when he comes home. And just a little outing around the countryside.
And he's white?
Huh?
He's white?
You don't know Buddy Sawyer?
No.
Well, he's the one that runs Beatty Rogers' place over there. He's the one that runs, the restaurant over
mm-hmm.
there. He's been over that generation or so.
Hmm.
He's a colored fellow. He lives right there in front of and that's what he got, those big handlebars way up like that, and seemed like he sits way down low.
Yeah. Chopper, they call them.
Yes.
Chopper.
Yeah.
They're dangerous machines. They're built for nothing but looks.
And they're hard, they have that front end sticking way out there, and it makes them really hard to steer,
because
it's too long.
Yeah.
And it'll fall over before it'll turn around.
They've carried that to such an extreme that they built them that they won't even run. I really died laughing when I heard that. We enter them in competition just for looks only. The engine has plastic in it. True.
That's a chopper.
Chopper, yeah. You can start anywhere with just an extra set of high handlebars and then go from there to one that doesn't run at all, and I suppose that's all.
That was, that was Henry Fonda's son. What was his
son? But now, Alex. He has a regular motorcycle.
Alex?
Huh?
What is his name? Alfie.
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 Yes. Alfie.
Alfie.
Well?
Yeah, he's this is probably one small one, 175 to call him, something like that.
You Stand haven't up. Seen him out there on the garbage detail.
No, I hadn't seen. Matter of fact, they've been sort of scarce for the last couple of weeks. We wish they would turn up. Come to think of it.
Well, Alfie will have to drive, won't he?
I suppose so. I don't know what the transition is there, whether the wife... I imagine if the wife doesn't continue working, it'll collapse, because she's a worker. Oh, Norman Quinney's, he's a speculator. He does. He loves to philosophize about things.
Oh, you mean that is?
Yeah. And he'll just break right out into something, and some sort of talk with you about a thing, and just sort of carry it off somewhere. I recall two or three instances with him, which he'll just sort of move off into some sort of strange world. You know, just doesn't have much relationship to everyday situation.
Yeah.
You know, his thoughts about things and how he feels about them. He'll jump right into it. Now, thinking about that, I have been more interested in going back and listening to him again, because that was,
Yeah.
Ooh, what, 4 years ago? Yeah, I first met him, or five? 5 years ago. 4 years ago. I've forgotten how long it was.
Let me tell you. This happened. Mr. Boyd, Mitchell Boyd, you know who I'm talking about, the old man?
Mm-hmm.
His, old, Thunderbird, what's his name over here? Works in the lumber. You know, Sugar Man.
Oh, his relative Sugar Man?
It's his daddy.
Sugar Man's daddy.
Oh, yes. Mitchell Boyd. He's a little half pint. Well, Mitchell's not big. Aren't any of them big. You see, the one that lives out there at the V,
mm-hmm.
Towards past. Feasterville's not very big either. Tommy Boyd, he's not big. Well, at this time, I was going around here with that little shoulder tape, and he was blind. And I go over and talk to him and tape it. And this particular time, generally it was interesting, but this particular time he was completely off his rocker. But it was a long, sustained piece of talk on his wife who died, and he had beat her and everything else, you see. And it was just lyric, the things that he did for her when she was in that shape. And I threw it away. I wouldn't keep it. And I have kicked myself ever since. I don't mean to be disrespectful, you see, but it was sustained and it was lyric. And I thought, well, he's off his rocker and I won't keep anything like this. But now, what they would think of, you see, is McQuinney. Now, I don't mean McQuinney's off his rocker or anything, but, you know, that sort of talk, if you listen to it, if you pay attention to it, you see, you can make something of it. It sounds way off, but it don't take much to see the direction of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just talking by analogy, you see, with
mm-hmm.
Mr. Boyd.
Mm-hmm.
And he got off a great deal in his last year.
Drink a lot?
Oh, no. He used to make moonshine.
Yeah, that's where Sugar Man got his name.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
He hauled the sugar?
The Sugar Man still makes it. He didn't used to. He still does it. Oh, he won't own up to it too much. You'd have to sort of pry it out of him.
Oh, he's close left to me.
But he'll tell you that, well, he always has a little jug around somewhere.
Oh,
does he? But he won't say that he'll come on over and I'll sell you some.
No.
But he, good Lord, he's out in the woods all day long. He's got ample opportunity to run stills and stuff like that.
He can go from one woods to another, can't he?
And he gets, you see him, I see him every now and then. He goes into Weaver's, and you buy a coat and come back out. And I say, Sugar Man, what's the matter? Well, you're not drinking today. He says, oh, no, I don't touch the stuff. Once in a while, I drink. And he'll do that periodically. And just here about 2 weeks ago, good Lord, he got into it.
Oh, did he?
Man from the station, Phillip 66 up at the interstate, came down there and was talking to Buster and said, Sugar Man came up there.
Well, now that's Tommy's father-in-law.
Oh, it is?
The one who used to run the 66 place, the truck stop?
Yeah, they're connected.
Yeah, well.
Right, those two people.
Yeah.
And the old Sugar Man came running over to him, and he said it was covered all with stuff, covered all over. He said he touched it, it was sticky. He says, call the law. These two men have come in there and they run his wife off or something and beat up on him and put all this dope all over him. And he said, call the law. I've got to have help. And he was just ranting and raving, you know, just all kinds of a mess. And then
oh, you man from on the 66?
Yeah, he was up at the interstate. He lives not too far from me. He walked up there. Then after a while, he said, well, I better go back home. Those men have to steal my meat. So he takes off back home, and about 2 hours later, we see him, and he's fairly cleaned up. You know, he's shaved again, but he's still bummed out. And when he does this, he's talking about the men ran his wife off or did something. But what happens is when his first wife first gets wind of him getting on the hooch, she just gets her checkbook, the kids, the car, takes off to the beach and stays on the beach for 3 or 4 days. And the kids and everybody just sit there at the beach and sun and everything. And then she'll come, somebody will call her up and tell her Sugar Man's off of it. And calm down.
Oh, you mean Sugar Man's wife?
Yeah, Sugar Man's wife will do this. Whenever he starts getting on the hooch, on his bender, because he just goes out of his head. And he really gets into drinking.
Well, you see, he grew up with his daddy making hooch right out there. There's an old family, I forget the name of it, and they owned out there, where old 441 comes into the new one, at Tuscarora. And there was a big two-story house there, and Mr. Boyd lived there. And he had a still on the second floor. And it caught on fire, exploded, something like that, and the house burned up. And the fire was so hot, it melted all the glass. And you see, Sugar Man came by it, didn't he?
Evidently. What he made me think about is more is the wife relationship. These people have a strange attitude towards their women. They'd rather fight and carry on, raise hell than anything in the world looks like, and be disgruntled. Never hear about any of them getting along well together. It's a standard thing. It's to be upset, mad.
Oh.
They just don't make it.
If I have said it once, I've said it 50 times to Buster. I say, Buster, I just need to talk to somebody who's made moonshine. I don't mean a bootlegger. I mean just old-fashioned making moonshine. And, you know, he just stands there and shakes his head and says, you know, the woods are full of them, but I don't happen to know anybody right now.
Yeah. We stood there many times, Sugar Man, Buster and I talked about it. And Sugar Man tell me all how to do it. Of course, I forget. And he helped me set it up, too, if I wanted to get going with it.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh yeah, he sure helped me.
You do your scores.
Yeah. Oh, he'd give me all the information and help me put it together.
Well, I wonder if you couldn't do it.
Love to.
haven't got any influence anywhere along the line. They'd send me right to jail. I wouldn't even have to turn the corner. They'd send me straight.
Well, you can talk to old Phil Crist over there, the guy that's opened up that Porsche shop across from me. He's a young guy. He just come down there, but he got sent up. Well, he got on parole, actually. He didn't have to spend any time in jail. Moonshine. he's making it quite well. The way he got caught is he down there, well, they raided him. And they had the convicts and everything out looking for him, see. They had to get convicts out to help him. And so they got wind of the raid going on, and they all ran out into the woods. And so he's sneaking around trying to get out of there, and he stumbles over this convict. He says, "Hey, man, what's going on here?" The guy says, "Shh, what's the raid over there?" He says, "Oh, okay, I'll be quiet." He just sneaks on out. And he got out of his thing, got in his car, and drove off. And then he thought about, it wasn't his brother in on that. His brother is smarter. I mean, his brother's always, he steals legally. And his friends were there. And he said, "Well, man, I just can't leave my friends there. I got to go back and see what's happening." He turns around, goes back, and meets the bloody sheriff coming out head on on the back, you know, to my nose. So he got it. I thought that was real funny about him stumbling over the convict. And the convict was looking for him.
I'll tell you one on Buster. Bastard. He never had told me much. He never had told me anything. But I learned a good bit from him. Yesterday, the day before. All we did was go to get put a letter in the megabox. And we stopped there. We saw Buster there on the way to go up. We came back and pulled up in front of Mr. Weaver's, and they had that sign there that said closed, and Buster was pulling his door to. And I got out like I was going in Mr. Weaver's, you see. I didn't want to let Buster think I wanted to see him. And he started mumbling. He says, "They're all closed around here. They're all closed around here." Well, I walked down there anyhow. And he went out to the car. And got in it and said he had to get to town. He was a half hour late. And he was feeling around for his keys. And he says, "Well, now, was there anything you wanted?" I says, "Yes. Some of these old cars I've got over there, can't you use them at all? Are they just making you move everything?" He says, "What do you want to do? You want me to take that old Chrysler?" Well, I says, "I wouldn't want that by itself. There's a couple more to go with it." And he kept looking for keys, and about that time, somebody drove up. And he said, "It's going to be the last one." And he went around to see if the key was in his trunk. About that time, this car drove up, and the fellow stuck his head out, and he had on one of those old stiff Western straw hats. You know, in those pickups, it's hard for a tall man, it's hard for him to get his head out. And I didn't know who it was. I didn't look. And he crooked his finger, Buster. Buster went over. That didn't stay long. He came back. And I walked back over there, and I said, "You've got a lot of friends." Well, he says, "That's old Jake Lightner." I said, "Don't tell me that, Jake Lightner. I haven't seen him for 5 years. Well, he says, "You might recognize him if he'd wash his face." Well, I said, "He can't wash his face during the week. He can do that on Saturday. You know, we carry on like that." And just then, this black woman come up. And she came up to Buster, and she stood on one foot, and she's kind of faced the other direction. Her eyes were popping out, and she says, "The house is on fire."
Mm.
Buster sat down and kept his seat in that car, and he said, "It won't crank." And she says something else, and he says, well, go ask the mayor. So she started around that, and all she says, that's the wrong way. She says, that's the way the house is. He says, the mayor's around this way. And she started back around there and said, no, it's around this way, where all them poodle dogs is. He rolled on down there and hollered to Faye. He says, you better watch that fella. Went on. And Faye says, I didn't see this. But Faye saw the black woman, and she said she went around mumbling and got in that car and looked like she was sort of erratic and said it, saying she's going to see Mr. Thrasher. So I got in the car, and we drove on home. And that just, I'm telling you, that happened just like that in 5 minutes. On the wing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was baiting him, and it came out, and he didn't know it. And this woman would come up just at the right time. Go ask the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And the house is already burning.
It's gone now. No more.
What house?
That was burning.
What house?
The one you're talking about.
I don't know which one it was.
It's about two blocks from Buster. Back over in the colored section.
Oh, in the colored section.
Yep. That's going to be a lot of trouble caused by that one. See, now Buster's been talking about that for at least a year. He's disgruntled. He's even brought it up at the council meeting. They hadn't paid any attention to him, and he's not about to keep their bastard equipment out by himself. And he's got his back up about it. Hell, I was standing out there, same thing. These people came running up. Well, Frank Weaver and a bunch of them said, get the fire truck. There's a huge wreck, and it's spilling gas and all this kind of stuff. But she said, get it yourself. I'm not going to have anything more to do with it. It won't even run. He signed off. He told him he was signing off because they hacked him off. He's only yelled at me one time. That's when I stepped on his roof. He really got upset. That's the only unkind word he's ever said to me.
He got to ask me time ago.
Mm-hmm. He's generally so good-hearted, but he does get upset once in a while. Disgruntled.
Yeah.
And that fire truck's been one of his things. I reckon if his own house was burning down, he wouldn't go crank it up. Even if he could, because he's already said he wasn't going to.
Go see the mayor.
Yeah.
Go see the mayor.
Tell the mayor. And that mayor, I'm telling you, he'd be handy at a fire.
Oh, yes. He can't walk 3 feet without getting some sort of vein trouble or something. He's killed him. Oh, that's funny. That poor old house was flattened out. Finally, the Gainesville fire truck came. They got one fire truck started. Got it over there. It wasn't... that's the pumper. The regular fire truck went over. Got it started belatedly. Got it over there and got the hoses out, and the house is on the corner of the roads here and roads here, and the house is here. There's a big fire hydrant right here, not 50 feet from the front door. Get the hose out and hook it all up, and they don't have a nozzle for the hose. They can't use it. So the Gainesville Fire Department comes down finally and gives them a nozzle, and all they can do, they helped them out to spray it around so everything else didn't burn down. And if it had been 3 months ago that happened, McNope had been in pretty bad trouble.
When it's dry?
Mm-hmm. Trees all around. You know, house right next to it. And you know what happens when the big, heavy fire gets going in this Spanish moss stuff and dry oaks. It just like that. There was a blaze of fire in the whole wooden building.
Well, he's within his rights.
Absolutely.
If he gives them notice.
He stood up and told them that. And then when the fire was all down and smoldering, there's a black population standing around mumbling for blood. They're going to be at the next meeting Monday night.
Monday night.
And it ain't Buster's blood.
No, they'd back Buster up too when you get right down to it, because he stood up there and it's right in the minutes, written down in the minutes. Buster Mountain says that neither of the fire trucks will start. And then these guys are still trying to put that damn Oklahomford Street through, $16,000 pavement, the pavement of a street that nobody even thinks about using, and they won't take care of their own fire trucks. The guys have been doing it out of their pocket. But now people are getting mad. Black people are going to be down there wanting blood now, because they've just about routed their community out because of this.
Tell the mayor.
That's funny. They lay everything on that poor mayor. I reckon this is the first mayor they've ever had, really. Like last time, mayor never even showed up. Nobody knew who he was. He got elected and attended the inauguration meeting, and he never came again. But now this mayor's put his foot in it, so his phone rings off the hook. People are continually calling him.
Is he the one with the poodle dogs?
With the poodle dogs.
He can't walk, huh?
Well, he walks, but it does his veins in or something. Now he's got plastic tubes and all kinds of mess. And he lives right next to George Wilson's property. See, that's just 1, 2, 3 lots, you might say. My place and George Wilson's and mayor's. Of course, it's fronted on the road where the gallery building is. Wilson and the mayor. And they have bloody fights.
Wilson and the mayor?
Yeah. Old Edie said, I've forgotten how many years, a couple of years ago, she said, "Wow, you could bet on it. You could absolutely bet on it. We'd go out and set up our barbecue pit. It could be any time we wanted to do it. Didn't make any difference. Just as soon as we had to set it up, Thomas would go out there and light a fire and burn trash." Now, I don't know whether George settled that with a gun or not. I think he got close to it. It was something, a rather violent order in which he settled his trash burning problem with his neighbor. And Thomas is always trying to bring suit against him for letting his kudzu vines grow over Thomas's fence. And it's just a really fine relationship going between two people.
You in the middle?
No, I'm on the other side.
You're on the end.
Yeah. Mayor's really not a bad egg. I sort of got him. He's got a rigidness to him, but he's approaching the age in which he understands a little bit and is freeing up. He doesn't have too much more to protect now.
Yeah.
Just like in Miami, the people doing the marching down there are the yippies and the retired people. Are marching together. So the mayor here's got that point, reached that point somehow or other that he's freeing up. And he's been a hard-nosed person all his life, you can tell. What did he call that talk I made? Presentment. Many times he says, "Wade, that was a fine presentment you made." And he uses many words like this. It's pretty great, you know. "But I made a presentment." I didn't know exactly how to take that. And he does such things as he wanted to put in a fishing pier down in Tuscarora for the local people to use, and he doesn't care about fishing. And he thinks it's a shame that there used to be a road that'd go through Tuscarora, and of course Connell and Thrasher and that preacher, what's his name? You're the one that went to India.
Yeah, Dr. Evans.
Evans. They all bought this property up, and
yes.
Then they passed laws to close off the roads. And he got to looking at that and seeing that there was roads there. And now people sort of have to sneak through the fence. There's no public place for these people to be on that lake. And he thought it'd be nice. And it's one of the things, it's just, you know, a different attitude that a person would think that way. And he knows damn well it'd be mostly colored people down there.